Before we begin our meeting, please turn off your phones.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the ULT in Philadelphia. And as is our custom, we will give you a reading of the United Lodge of Theosophists, their declaration. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave at the time, or the inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim and purpose and teaching. Therefore, it has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, or creed, or sex, conditional organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. And we advise you, before you leave, if you haven't done so, to pick up one of these wonderful little pamphlets. It has 4 pages, plus the schedule, plus the declaration. Just shortly and quickly, we have 2 weekly meetings today, Sunday. There are talks and discussions from 11 to 12. Doors open at 10:30, as you see. We begin at 11 and close at noon. The main topic for March is humanity has never been without a friend. Today the subject is the invisible guardian wall. Our Wednesday class is a study class in the Ocean of Theosophy by W.Q. Judge. The doors of the lodge open at 5:15 so that you may examine what is offered in the library. It's a reference library, including the pages in the ocean for that evening's class. The library closes at 7:15 and classes begin at 7:30 and end at 8:30. Yes, there is a table displaying literature, pamphlets, and books that one may take a look at and purchase. The librarian and the one at the book table are 2 volunteers willing to answer questions in reference to your program, our program, as stated in the declaration. We'd like to add, next Sunday from 11 till noon will be a special occasion, a time of the year when we pause to remember William Quan Judge. As we always do on the heading of the declaration, we ask that as we arrive, we take our seats quietly, no talking, before we begin this yearly recall at 11 a.m. Before we begin our class this morning, there will be a reading from this little pamphlet by HPB. It's called The Voice of the Silence. To it. Know, O Lord, draw thou that thou of the secret path, its pure fresh waters must be used to sweeter make the ocean's bitter waves. That mighty sea of sorrow, formed of the tears of men. Alas, when once thou hast become like the fixed star in highest heaven, that bright celestial orb must shine from out the spatial depths for all, save for itself. Give light to all, but take from none. Alas, when once thou hast become like the pure snow in the mountain vales, cold and unfeeling to the touch, warm and protective to the seed that sleepeth deep beneath its bosom. 'Tis now that snow which must receive the biting frost, the northern blast, thus shielding from their sharp and cruel tooth the earth that holds the promised harvest, the harvest that will feed the hungry. Self-doomed to live through future countless, unthanked and unperceived by men, wedged as a stone with countless other stones which form the guardian wall. Such is thy future if the seventh gate thou passest. Built by the hands of many masters of compassion, raised by their torches, by their blood cemented, it shields mankind, since man is man, protecting it from further and far greater misery and sorrow. But all man sees it not, will not perceive it, nor will he heed the word of wisdom, for he knows it not. But thou hast heard it. Thou knowest all. O thou of eager, guileless soul, and thou must choose. Then hearken yet again on Solon's path, O Strotopity. Thou art secure, aye, on that margur where naught but darkness meets the weary pilgrim, where torn by thorns the hands drip blood, the feet are cut by sharp, unyielding flints. And Mara yields his strongest arms, there lies a great reward immediately beyond.
That's it.
The guardian wall. What would we consider that to be? Guardian wall? Guard us against what? And in consideration of that, we must reflect. We see that man does more harm to man than nature. And that man is the only kingdom that can be selfish. Every other kingdom lives to serve. To serve. And when we come to the human kingdom, we are given a choice. Who to serve? We either serve the highest that we can consider, the all, everyone, or choose to serve ourselves. Well, we have developed the art of serving ourselves, and perhaps the root of our problem. So why do human beings, human as we are, try to serve humanity by developing in themselves their true nature? Now, what is our true nature? Well, we are told that we are not the seen, we're the seer. And we are the witness to all of this expression of life. So we see and we can know and we can understand that as we have evolved and are evolving, our passions and desires, the animal nature, is really in control. There are few amongst us that have reined in that selfishness. We're not all terrible people. No, we're not. We do our best and we try not to be selfish. But we can't help it. We have to admit to ourselves what we are. We're not exempt from what we see outside of us. It's within us. We have to understand that because we see it, we have some responsibility for its existence. So, as this seer who sees this animal that is running amok and doing as it likes and really having a good time. Sure, it suffers, but those bruises we can camouflage and we can tell lies about and we can do whatever we like. It's just make-believe. But the reality of who we are is not. And that's the seer. So we take that position that we are the seer. And by taking that position, we therefore can make a decision about how this animal acts. Because the animal is controlled by the mind. And if we can't control our mind, we can't control the animal. So the mind has to be brought under the control of the seer. The Bhagavad Gita. The voice of the silence. It talks about this. This journey is somewhat the same for everybody, but it differs with each person. But it's an individual effort. An individual effort. For what? Well, we see all the suffering in the world. And yes, we take responsibility for it. So what do we do about it? How do we change the world? What do we do? Well, we change ourselves. That's all that we can do at this moment. And that is the biggest task that we have. To change one thing in our nature for the betterment of humanity and ourselves. It's a ripple of effects that are great. This idea of a guardian wall, well, the reality is that because of our natures, because of this dynamic energy which we exhibit through our mind and our heart, we are creators. We create this world in which we live. But we've forgotten that we are here to serve, to help on all the other kingdoms. We are a servant of life. And these servants are what Theosophy calls adepts, elder brothers, those who were like us, but went through the evolutionary process, speeded up through effort, desire, to understand this world in which we live. not only on the physical, but on the astral and on the spiritual planes, because we live in all three. We don't just live here on this world of seen. There's this whole world that is unseen, astral and the spiritual world. Those worlds live within us. And the physical is but a reflection of that which we understand to be true. Now, how do we serve? We have forgotten how to serve because we are so caught up in our Western life, our commerce, our materialism. But there is a, you know, our Western minds can't quite comprehend that there's other cultures, other religions, philosophies, and science that substantiates a whole world that has been mapped out and signposts have been placed everywhere that will remind us of that we are soul beings and that there is a way to develop that soul. There's a way to live in the all, not in the particular. It's service. True service is the willingness to give up the personal for that which is greater. This philosophy is ever striving to be explained impersonally. It's an impersonal understanding because it applies to everyone. Not anyone in particular, but everyone. And our understanding of it helps us be better able to help and teach others. We do that by controlling our minds and deciding how we could best serve each other, how we can help, how can we alleviate the suffering, how can our ideas in our conversations with our friends and neighbors help change their thinking, help alleviate some of their suffering, because we live in avidya, the mansion of death and suffering. We live here. To rise above that, we have to become unattached to the fruits of our labor. We have to be single-minded in our approach to everything. And we have to sacrifice what we do to the good of mankind or to the highest that we can understand. Service. This idea of service is so ancient and at the very root of our being. In other philosophies and religions, they talk about the guru param para chain. Well, that's where there is a teacher. And from that teacher, there's a succession of teachings. There's not a successor. There's just a succession. When if one guru passes away, there's always another guru there. There is not any one that can take over the authority of someone else. One must understand that for themselves. The authority lies in the truth. So there are those beings, those perfected beings, who have worked through this plane of material existence and have controlled their lower nature and have been and are mind beings. Mind in the sense that they are conscious on this plane, self-conscious and aware. Many teachings say they are awake. They have become awakened. And that's what we are trying to do, awaken ourselves to our true nature. So these gurus, there's a whole lineage. In fact, the Buddha is one of many. The Tathagatas, which are the highest. The Dalai Lama. There is a succession of teachings about this selfless service for the benefit of mankind. We have in this these rooms, in this philosophy, they speak of Nirmanakayas. Those are those beings who have sacrificed that personal for the everlasting. But not only doing that, when they have reached that gate of rest and bliss that is spoken of, but they refuse to enter. They have stayed back to help and benefit mankind. They are the cement and the mortar and the rocks of that wall to hold back all of the things that man is capable of creating when he is selfish. So these Nirmanakayas are simply perfected beings that have said, no, I cannot go on to nirvana. I cannot go on to bliss. I must stay back and help. Because there are other vestures of perfection. There's a Sambhogaya, a Dharmakaya. These are all perfected beings. But when they reach their point of perfection, they can exit this plane of our existence. Because we are told that this is a universe that is eternal, boundless. So you think because of this world, that's it? No. It's a continuum. It is boundless, it's eternal, it has no beginning and it has no end. So these ideas are eternal ideas. And that if we study, we want to know the truth, not to help ourselves, but to help others. There comes with that self-knowledge great understanding. It stated that we should desire nothing. And that in the Gita, there is a path that is laid out of how we can serve. The question is always asked, well, what is my duty? Well, your duty lies here, in this moment, in our expression of how we think and feel in this moment. Because in this moment, we are the creators of the future. We are creators of the next moment. So those ideas that we hold, that respect and gratitude for those who have sacrificed their lives in the service of humanity, those elder brothers, those adepts, those Nirmanakayas, those beings that leave with us the means by which we can become as them. Not perhaps in this life, but we can enter the path and we can work on for life and lives. Because the idea that we are not here for but one lifetime is the root of much of our problems. We are a pilgrim on a journey. A pilgrim, and we are, life has is unfolding these experiences. Now we must take control of this life that's unfolding. We must become as those Nirmanakayas, as those perfected beings. We must try to think as they think, become unattached to the fruits of our labor. Not wanting to be the personality, but wanting to show their individuality. These elder brothers, when we work for their benefit and in their name, they will flourish. It is a very important idea that there are perfected beings, that there are those souls who have sacrificed their personal selves for the sake of humanity. And they are constantly behind the scenes encouraging and helping us in very subtle ways. We are mind beings. We can choose to be gods or devils. Theosophy is showing us the path to God, godhood, perfectibility. We are far from that, but we must keep in our minds that we are perfectible. We are not evolved from an ape. We are not degraded. We are eternal beings, boundless, immutable, omnipresent, in our very core. By uncovering that light, which we have covered up with our personalities, we can begin to shine. But that bridge between us and that spiritual life is that lower nature. We have to control it. We have to be in charge of that before we can begin to understand what it truly means to serve unselfishly, selflessly. Well, these ideas are at the root of our duty. We come into these rooms, what is our duty? We have so much around, what is our duty? And that's what we've all searched for. And when we find it, we begin to become reborn in the fact that there is so much energy connected with that, with helping others. Unselfishly and selflessly, unnoticed. But the gratitude that we feel for our teachers is what carries us forward. Because that gratitude is a respect which we feel for those who have come before. Well, we have the signposts along the way, the Bhagavad Gita, the Voice of the Silence. This is a path of individual journey. One must do it for themselves. But when we come together, we can help each other, because it is, we need to understand, but not only understand in the world outside of us, we need to understand that world within us, that we are humanity, that which we see outside of us exists within us. So how do we treat it? Do we try to kill it? or bring it under our guidance and control. And it will die out if we do not give it energy, do not give it attention. The universe is empty and has no meaning. We fill the universe up with our ideas and our meanings. We are shown that there is a whole lineage of beings who have followed this path, and that it is in service to mankind is our ultimate duty. Well, we'll stop here, and we'll open up for discussion. Yes.
Well, what comes to our mind is that physical representation of the great Chinese wall in China. Remnants of it are still left. And it's our understanding that it traveled from the north, east, south, and at one time, exactly what it was. It was, I don't know how many lane highway running on the top of that wall, a guardian wall, a physical representation of a spiritual fact. Could you explain to us further of that guardian wall?
Well, yes. We are, our minds are dynamic generators of force. We live in this world of the seen, and we create constantly. So, if we examine ourselves, we know we have not been creating that which is beneficial to mankind. We have become selfish and separative. And as is stated in the Gita, there is a war going on, but it's not going on outside of us, it's going on within us. And because of that, because of the nature of man himself, because we live in this avidya, this world of ignorance and darkness, and pain and suffering, mankind thinks that they are that. They are those things that happen. They are those beings that live in that world that is them. And then, but until one begins to have suffered enough and say to themselves, why do I suffer? Why do I suffer? It's because of my own actions. And that there is a path to alleviate that suffering. So this guardian wall are those beings who have taken that path. Their influence it manifests on the physical plane, but it really is on those astrals and spiritual planes where they hold back the force of all our badness or all our selfishness and all our separativeness so that it doesn't crush us out. And that generation after generation, there are those beings that make this effort to perfect themselves, to help. But that perfection is not done in a vacuum. It's done amongst us. And we are all affected by it. You know, and that really just more or less shows to us that we are not what we see. We are more than that. And this guardian wall, we are not without a friend. And we are told again and again, man is not without a friend. And there are countless gurus and sentient beings and bodhisattvas. They have all these names that they've been given through different cultures and examinations of our spiritual being. They exist everywhere. You know, and we need to be humble and be respectful.
With all the issues that are going on in the world today, one could make an argument that, well, why aren't they doing anything now? Why aren't they helping us? Why aren't they encouraging people to try and be good, and to try and help, to, you know, to encourage more compassion? So where are they? If somebody would come up to us and say, well, where are they now? Why aren't they helping us? What kind of an answer could we give?
Well, very bluntly, is they're here. They're here amongst us. These ideas, it is them. These ideas that are found in these books, the Voice of the Silence, the Bhagavad Gita. We have a library, a secret doctrine, Isis Unveiled. These are not the works of HPB in the sense that she created them. They are just part of that guru parampara chain. This is wisdom that has been passed down through the ages. And these adepts know what cycle we're in. We're in Kali Yuga. We're in this age of spiritual darkness, of materialism. It's the Iron Age. That which is good is low in this world. That which is bad has been elevated. They know this. And they know for every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. They know the law of karma. So, in the 1800s and 1875, the reappearance of the Theosophical movement is an indication that they are here. They are trying to help mankind to change the ideas that they hold to be true, that we are eternal beings. Reincarnation and karma are facts of nature. That we cannot live for ourselves. We live for others in the service of humanity. That is our duty. And they show it and they point it out. But they can't make us do anything. They can only reawaken in us our true nature. If we let it go. If we don't hold on to the things that we think are true. Or our parts of our personality. You know? This is a journey. And we're learning. And we're trying to help. And they're here. But you have to reach up to them. They cannot appear in this time of great darkness and materialism. It's too heavy. They have ascended back. But their influence is here. And their work is done through their students, to their those who want to keep these ideas alive. And that's us. We are doing the work of the masters, not our work, but of these exalted beings. And we have to remember that. We do not work for ourselves. They are the example which we live by. Put them into your heart and imagine them in your daily struggles. How they would act. How they, you know. The times are dark. We need to be the candle.
Isn't that akin to the parent who does the child's homework? So the child gets an A on the paper, but doesn't understand how to do it.
Well, we think that's exactly the point. And that they cannot do the work for us. And we know as students here that someone can sit up here and say something, but that doesn't make it true. Just because the words are spoken here doesn't make it true unless we examine it for ourselves and see the truth in it. So we are constantly observing and trying to discriminate and trying to develop that discrimination so that we can be better able to help teach others.
So in a certain way, we have to be on guard within ourselves. If we were raised from a religious philosophy that taught original sin and vicarious atonement and forgiveness by, a priest or a minister, whomever, that kind of thinking can allow a passive, somebody else is going to save me. Something outside of me is going to cure the world's evils, and I just have to go with the flow. Is that what we have to be on guard against?
That's what exists in the world outside. We have been raised a certain way, but it exists out there. And it's like a trigger. We don't know. Sometimes we're not aware. But everyone acts from that religious standpoint, of some kind of religious standpoint, whether it's unreligious or not. They have an idea of what life is, or what they've been told life is, and they live their life according to those ideas. So that, yes, we all have ideas that that have created a problem. Look at the world in which we live. We've created this. Our religions have created this. Our philosophies have created this. The way we think has created this. How we think is of supreme importance. Just considering these ideas in those moments of idleness, just to reflect on them, just to keep us so that we are in touch with our soul, because it's so easy to get caught up in this world in which we see everything and feel everything. Yes.
Interesting thing about that too is an examination of history. Every religion and probably every major community has some legend in it of some savior coming to arrest them from whatever predicament they found themselves in. One that comes to mind right off is the Mahdi, who is supposed to come in at the end of the days and remove all of the adversity in the way of the people who believe in his religion. Another one is the white buffalo that was supposed to make an appearance to the indigenous people of this continent at the end of the days and come and remove. But when you study history, they never come. They never show up. There's been no place in a history where someone comes and relieves people of that which they're supposed to do for themselves. It never happens.
Well, we would say that they do come. Buddha,
you're right.
Krishna,
right.
Jesus, Zoroaster. There's countless. Even Plato and Socrates and Pythagoras and Ambilicus, Ammoniacus, I mean, there's Plotinus, Ambilicus, I think that's how his name is pronounced, but there are countless people or beings that have been amongst us, that have pointed out the truth. And that if I am the way and the light, what, you know, what? I am the way and the light, not my personally, but this path. You know, this understanding of our unity, of our oneness. It's ourselves, yes. We are the way. But we have to realize it. We are the path. We are all of that. We just have to realize it and develop in ourselves that capacity. We live in this world of materialism. We don't talk about soul in our conversations. We don't talk about it. It has no value. It has no value. And when you do, it's not about personalities. It's about that which exists within us that makes us what we are. I just wanted to read. I'm sure a lot of you have seen this little message on top of the bookcase. But if you haven't, I would like to just read it to you. Living for others is the rule of nature. Nothing in nature lives for itself. Rivers don't drink their own water. Trees don't eat their own fruit. A description of true service. These kingdoms are an example unto us of service.
Seeing that the idea of a guardian wall from a physical point of view, science has proven its existence. However, since these teachings have come into the world and they've been spread broadcast, and there's still 28 some odd lodges spread around the world, then it must be the idea that are given out that in some way protect us from even greater wrongs. For instance, the astronaut that just came back, he had to travel thousands, hundreds of miles per hour just to get back into our atmosphere. And when he left, he had to do the same thing in order to break out of that which surrounds. Here is just a step to consider the ideas we hold, and these ideas that we discuss, it, we try to put them into action in our daily lives. And if we knew in detail some of the dangers that we have been saved from because of the ideas, right away we get an idea that it must be what it certainly is. And through all of the teachings, these great beings are mentioned.
Well, you bring up a point, and it was brought up earlier, about ideas that we hold from our background, from our religions, from whatever. Why are we going out in space? Why are we trying to go to other planets? Why? Why? What's out there that doesn't exist in here? The ancients knew of all these things. They knew of intelligence, the intelligences on other planets. They knew all of this. But how did they know it? They didn't get in a rocket ship and go. No, it's our materialistic ideas of outside of us is where the answer lies. It's inside. And the masters of wisdom, these elder brothers, are constantly pointing that out. There are, we see in life that not all is bad, not all is selfish. There are those who dedicate their lives to helping and serving others. Whether be a religious group or a philosophical group, an attempt is made to help others. You know, the idea of proselytizing, well, that's originates in trying to help others. But that does more harm than good. Yes.
You had talked about thinking, thought, and with all the teachings, okay, that we're exposed to and we see and we understand, I think the biggest problem is that we don't really believe that we can reach consciousness. The thought, we don't believe that we, you know, we create, but I think we really believe that we can create.
Why do you doubt?
Yeah, that becomes the question. Why do you doubt? But see, like the knowledge that we're getting right now, the information we're getting right now, okay, we walk outside and walk down the street, it's like we're being fed other nonsense. You know, you go sit in front of the TV, you're fed other nonsense. We're told, and we're constantly told that we cannot do this and we cannot do that. You know, and it is my belief that when it comes to chronic illness, if a doctor doesn't address your state of mind, your state of being, it's like it's malpractice, as far as I'm concerned. Because the thinking, this is, you know, what I believe, the thinking contributes to all that. And we believe that if we think that we cannot heal or we cannot reach a consciousness, then that's what it's going to be.
That's exactly right. And what we believe in when we die, afterlife, that's what it's going to be. If we don't think it's going to be anything, it won't be anything. We create our world. We create it. By doubt, we create that doubt. We have to give up doubt. There is nothing to doubt. You have to become firmly convinced that you're an eternal being, that you're a being of light, of endless possibilities. We're sort of trapped right now by our karma of what we have done in the past. But again, we create our future by how we think now. So whatever it's been, it's been. If we want a better tomorrow, we have to think differently.
Do create and manifest as we move in an ever constant flow of motion. And I think that you have to be, while we're in this age of spiritual darkness, we're also in a very dangerous era or a very dangerous time where you are influenced by outside influences that can then in turn influence your internal kind of manifestation and creation, you know, by watching television, by listening to the radio, by eavesdropping on other people's conversations, just by walking down the street, and using vibrational tones and all types of just where the technology is nowadays, you can really, it can be done with sound waves. That's why when they're in the music studio, they're in these like soundproof rooms, so the sound waves don't get out, but they can very well influence you as a being, as an infinite being. And I think it's very real in a very dangerous time period where being influenced, if you're not able to turn off your sonar or your telepathic abilities, if you're in tune with that type of with what's going on in this generation, I think that you can really become bogged down. You can really become, you know, when you start placing that type of belief in a being, and when there's that, when like the woman was saying about the hairs, how there's that searching to an outside source that's going to salvate or bring you your salvation or your or whatever you're looking for in that term, in that aspect. I think, yeah, it does. And then when you open yourself up to that type of influence, then you have all these other negative influences that can really, when you realize that the true reflection is just that it's you, you're looking at yourself.
That's why the journey.
It's so dangerous. It's really dangerous.
Well, there is always an element of danger in darkness. Our only protection is our heart, our intention, our motive, our desires to help others. When we go into that selfish place, we attract all of that. And we are told that we need to build a foundation upon which we can stand, so we could buffer these winds of desire and darkness. And that foundation is that we are a oneness. We are eternal, boundless, immutable, and omnipresent in our true nature. We are eternal light, but we know it not. We think we are what we see. The great illusion. And we are not separate. We are a oneness. So, like, these ideas have to be dwelt upon all day long. You have to say to yourself, okay, if you're paying attention, you're paying attention to your mind all day long. All day long. When it wanders, when it goes here, you don't have to do anything about it, but pay attention to it. But then you'll decide, well, let me see. I've done this, I did this the other day. Let me do it. Let me think about something different. Let me think about, you know, desire nothing. Give up your life so that we can live. Give up this life so that we can truly live in that greater life. You know, think of ideas that stimulate our imagination and take us from the mundane. There's no doubt that there is great danger. There is no doubt that we have to protect ourselves from these unseen influences. Our heart will gather to us that which we are, if we let it. Yes?
Like you were saying, protecting yourself, when it comes to like protecting yourself, there's different ways you can protect yourself by your actions, per se. If you're seen as being one way, a nice person, and all of a sudden, for years you've known as being a nice person, and then all of a sudden somebody sees you angry, they know that's not your character. So by you getting rebuked, I would say rebuke, like getting mad, putting your foot down, being stern with somebody, say, well, you crossed the line, this is as far as you can go. You have a right to do that too also, right?
That the world in which we live in comes at us.
Right.
Okay? We have to sort it out. We have to sort this out. And we have to live in dignity and live with respect and gratitude that these teachings are alive and they exist. And there are those beings who keep it alive. Yes. Well, if you found these ideas helpful, we welcome you to our meetings. They are free and open to the public. But we'd like to remind you that all these activities in this lodge are done on a voluntary basis of time, of service, and money. And all are welcome to participate. Meeting adjourned. Hi, Charles.
Touché, touché.
You got a little carried away there, Charles. You're reading paragraphs I didn't
give you. Well, I couldn't figure out what you meant. 74, and then hearken yet again.
That's where it ends. The beginning and end.
Oh, is that where it was?
That's all right.
But didn't say that. It said yet hearken again, so I figured you had to read it. What did you say end?
Start and end. That's how it's all started.
Oh, well, that's the way you read. No harm was done. No harm was done.
Do this.
Yeah, no harm was done. That's all right. Very good, Mike. Very good.
Charles, as usual.
Yeah.
I looked up the Phoenix website.
Yeah, yeah. I was on there too all day yesterday.
Yeah, that's nice.
It is. It's.
Yeah.